A red sports car pulls up outside a country club hosting the West Valley Kennel Club award lunch, and the driver, Barry Hastings, is met by a valet parker.
Hello.
You?
You bet.
Please be careful with her. She's like my child.
Yes, sir.
Barry takes a medical bag and a jacket from the car.
Have a good day.
McBride, docked, with ITFC audio description. The valet takes the car and Barry enters the club. He takes the hand of a woman at a reception table.
Tara, you look lovely as always.
Thank you.
He crosses a large dining room, greeting diners as he passes.
Later on, if you don't.
All right, well, that's Jonathan.
Sure.
Okay. I'll meet you back here.
Great, thanks.
Bye.
See you, Mike.
Right,
you.
He joins Judy, who's sitting at a table, pouring herself a glass of sparkling wine, and leans on the back of a chair.
Drowning your sorrows again?
Kathy Monroe blames me for Lulu tossing her kibble on the judge's shoes.
Excuse me, but it was your obedience class that transformed that creature.
Kathy or Lulu?
Do you know where Laurie is? Captain has the jitters.
I think she's in the small conference room behind the bar.
See you soon. Save some of that for me.
She gives a wry smile and he heads into the conference room where blonde Laurie is waiting with a golden retriever dog.
Hello, Laurie.
Thanks for coming.
No problem.
I'm a little nervous.
Well, that's to be expected. Let's have a look here.
He crouches in front of the dog and gently checks its eyes, ears, and teeth.
Perfect.
He takes a stethoscope from the bag and pops the pods in his ears.
You try that remedy I prescribed? The one with the impatience?
Oh, yeah, put a few drops in his water.
That's good.
He listens to the dog's chest.
Yeah, his heart rate's a little elevated.
He puts the scope away and strokes the dog.
You have been such a good boy, and you're going to be even better for your mom. It's just mostly chamomile. I like to use it. Helps him relax.
Great.
He takes an eyedropper from a small brown bottle, and his hands disappear beneath the dog's abdomen.
Yeah, I see. So, how you doing?
Oh, well, a little nervous.
I could put some of this on you if you like.
I'm okay, thank you.
You know what? No Golden's ever taken the top prize before.
Yeah.
And that makes you a star.
I don't know about a star. I'll settle for not making a fool of myself out there.
You're gonna do fine.
All right.
Pretty blonde Laurie smiles broadly. In reception, a tall, thin man is signing in. Michael White, a shorter man with shoulder-length brown hair, arrives and looks around the dining room. He looks annoyed and moves on. Dressed all in white, brunette wheelchair user Sarah Sinclair is wheeled towards the reception table by her tall, thin husband, Frank.
Hello, Tara.
Hello, Miss Sinclair.
Frank, dressed in a pale grey suit, wheels Sarah across the dining room to Judy's table, where a waitress called Iris is pouring a glass of water. To the waitress.
Excuse me, miss. Could you remove the chair, please?
Certainly, sir.
Thank you.
The chair is moved.
Hello, Judy.
Hello.
The wheelchair replaces it.
Should have been our Dexter.
I know.
Why did our little boy have to come in second to that stupid hair? Hello, Lorraine.
Sarah flashes an insincere smile at a passerby. Barry joins them.
Judy, did you save me that champagne? Sarah, you look lovely as always. Hello, partner.
Why the bag?
Oh, Captain needed a little TLC.
How is our illustrious winner?
Just fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Today is a proud day for the West Valley Kennel Club. On behalf of the committee, I want to welcome you all to the award luncheon for this year's dog show. Now let's bring onto the stage the deserving winner of Best in Show with his deserving owner. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Humorin Harvest Moon, also known as Captain, with his owner, Laurie Carter.
Laurie and Captain trot into the dining room and up to the bald-headed chairman at a podium who hands them a rosette.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone who's been so supportive of us over the last few years. And an extra big special thank you to Captain. Just owning a dog like Captain is reward enough, but to have him win an award like this is too wonderful for words. Thank you so much.
The diners applaud. Frank looks pleased, but Sarah slow hand claps, looks jealous, and shakes her head. Michael is at a T-junction in a service hallway. He looks down one of the corridors, then heads back the way he came. Judy and Barry lounge in a doorway near the dining room.
It's my fault, you know, I mean, it's just...
They both look startled. They go through a service door and find Iris distraught.
What is it?
Down there. Be careful.
Wait here.
Barry leaves Judy with Iris and heads down the service hallway. Rounding a corner, he finds Laurie kneeling over a body holding a pistol. She looks up at Barry uncomprehendingly. An interview room at an LAPD police station. Laurie is sitting at a table. Roberta Hansen comes in.
Laurie Carter?
Yeah.
I'm Detective Hansen. Do you understand why you're here?
You think I murdered Frank Sinclair?
Didn't you?
He sent me a message telling me to meet him backstage. By the time I got there, he was already dead.
Two people saw you holding the gun that killed him.
I found it on the ground next to him. I know I shouldn't have picked it up. I didn't kill him.
What was your relationship with Mr. Sinclair?
I think I need to talk to my lawyer.
That can be arranged. But under the circumstances, I'm placing you under arrest for the murder of Frank Sinclair.
Roberta leaves. Laurie wearily strokes her forehead. In a courtroom, grey-haired John McBride and his partner Phil Newbury and their East Asian client are in front of a judge called Jeffries.
No further questions.
Your witness, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Mrs. Hall, you were standing directly in front of the ATM machine when this incident occurred, is that correct?
Yes, I'd just taken out some cash.
How much?
$320.
I see. And then what happened?
Someone barged into me, grabbed my wallet, and ran up the street.
What time was this?
8:42.
8:42.
I just checked my watch.
I see. So it was already dark?
It was, but there's good street lighting directly by the ATM.
And how long did this incident take?
About 5 seconds, I would guess.
5 seconds. And yet you were still able to pick out your assailant from a police lineup?
Yes.
Do you see that person in the courtroom today?
Yes.
Would you point him out for us, please?
That man sitting at the table.
Thank you. Please let the record show that Mrs. Hall has identified the young man sitting next to my associate, Mr. Newberry, at the defense table. Now, you're absolutely sure that this is the man who assaulted you and stole your money?
Yes.
Absolutely positive?
Absolutely.
Objection, Your Honor. How many times does Mrs. Hall have to answer the same question?
Sustained. Mr. McBride, she's sure, okay? Can we please move on?
Yes, Your Honor. I just wanted absolute clarity on Mrs. Hall's identification of her assailant.
Well, you have it.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Tseng, would you please stand up?
A man stands and Mrs. Hall looks hesitant.
Are you still absolutely sure, Mrs. Hall?
What is this, Mr. McBride?
Merely trying to point out, Your Honor, that sometimes we can't even trust our own eyesight. This is Mr. Kim, by the way, and if you need a good bookkeeper, he works for my account.
I'm sorry, I guess I didn't get as good a look at the man as I thought I did.
Well, I move for dismissal, Your Honor.
Under the circumstances, the people have no objection.
This case is dismissed. But I'm not through with you, Mr. McBride. I told you before I wouldn't stand for any stunts in my courtroom. You held in contempt. Take Mr. McBride somewhere he can reflect on his theatrics.
To Phil.
Bring the checkbook.
Picked a good day to visit, McBride.
Yeah? Why's that?
Meatloaf day.
Really? What's so special about the meatloaf?
You can't even tell it's roadkill once the chef's through with it. Of course, you can just apologize to the judge, pay your fine, and get back to work.
Well, you know, Jonesy, as it happens, I am partial to meatloaf.
Whatever you say, McBride. Whatever you say. Don't hurt yourself in that. Some lawyers have been known to do that.
Max puts in a cell opposite Laurie.
Hello?
If you don't mind me asking, what's a lawyer doing in here?
Well, it seems I'm just a little too theatrical for a certain judge. How about you?
Bail hearing.
What's the charge?
Murder.
Really? Murder? It's funny, you don't look the type.
I'm not the type. It's what I keep trying to tell everyone, but no one believes me.
What happened?
It was the perfect day. My golden retriever had just won best in show at the West Valley Dog Show, and there was an award banquet to celebrate.
Congratulations.
Yeah, good old captain. Do you like dogs?
I must. I have one.
Really?
Jesse. Mutt.
Mutts can be great.
Yeah. So, what happened after the banquet?
Captain was feeling a little off after the presentation, so I thought the best thing would be to bring him back to the car, you know, get him away from all the noise. So, I was in the lot when I got this text message on my cell phone.
From who?
My ex-boyfriend, Frank Sinclair.
What did the message say?
He asked me to meet him at the back of the country club. He said it was urgent. I found him lying on the floor, bleeding,
There was a gun next to him. The next thing I know, I'm being charged with murder.
Who's representing you?
Alan Gilchrist.
Yeah, Alan. I know Alan. He's one of the good guys. He knows what he's doing.
Jones, the court officer, comes in.
I guess this is it.
Good luck.
Gilchrist is not coming.
What?
He's on his way to the hospital. They think he's had a heart attack.
Oh, God. So what happens now? Alan's the only lawyer I know.
They'll find you a public defender. Or you can wait in the cell until they know what's going on with Alan.
That could be ages, couldn't it?
There is another way.
Back in court.
Your Honor, Emma McBride, standing in for Alan Gilchrist for the bail hearing only.
That's fine. Proceed, Counselor.
Thank you. Your Honor, Lori Carter has strong ties to the community. And until this bizarre incident, no criminal record whatsoever. She presents a danger to no one. And I would request that you set a modest bail.
This is a murder charge, Your Honor. A cruel and vicious crime has been perpetrated. The state opposes bail.
Bail is set for $250,000.
Thank you, Your Honor.
To Mac.
I don't have $250,000.
Well, if you pay them cash, you only have to give them 10%. Can you raise that much?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I have to go.
Thank you very much. I don't know what I would have done.
The bailiff here will take you in the back. You'll sign some paperwork. Be out of here in a couple of hours.
Okay.
Give my best to Alan.
I will.
Night. McBride's spacious office in a tall building that overlooks a restaurant with an orange neon sign. Lori arrives at the door and nervously raps on the doorframe.
Mr. McBride?
Lori Carter.
Hi.
Come on in.
Thanks. I hope I'm not interrupting.
No, not at all. Just catching up on all the important fish news. Have a seat.
Thanks.
She sinks into a leather armchair.
Let me guess. Alan cannot continue on your case.
That's right. How did you know?
Well, even though I thought we hit it off pretty good when we were in the joint together, I heard Alan might be laid up for a while.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do. I guess I'm looking for another lawyer.
Hmm. Oh, did you happen to know I am one?
Yes, I had heard that somewhere.
Huh.
So, where do we start?
Tell me what happened that night.
Frank sent me a text message to meet him backstage, so I went. Frank! And found him on the floor.
Did you touch anything?
I guess I might have picked up the gun.
Frank! Somebody help!
All I could think of was whether or not he was okay.
So basically, you just covered the entire murder weapon with your fingerprints.
I didn't know what I was doing. I think I was in shock. But you have to believe me, Mr. McBride. I didn't kill Frank Sinclair.
Mac rubs his lip thoughtfully. Waiting at the police station, Mac studies his mobile phone.
Hey, Mac.
Hi, Roberta. Just the lady I was looking for. Look at that. Phil has upgraded my cell phone. Now I can send emails, browse the web, even take photographs.
Say San Andreas.
San Andreas.
He takes pretty blonde 40-something Roberta's picture with his mobile. They head towards her office.
Welcome to the Century.
Thank you.
I heard about your little run-in with Hang'em High Jeffries.
Yeah, well, you know, if I can bring a little happiness into people's humdrum lives, it ain't all been for nothing.
Make 'em laugh.
Right.
And you're here because?
Lori Carter.
What about her?
So, tell me about her.
Alan Gilchrist is representing her.
Not anymore. He's recuperating from a heart attack.
Roberta looks puzzled.
And why did you get involved?
We were actually prison mates.
She's accused of killing her ex-lover, you know.
I know that.
Her married ex-lover.
I did not know that.
You want it? Lori Carter sent Frank Sinclair a text message. Must see you in backstage now.
Well, hold a second. Frank sent Lori a text message.
No, Lori sent Frank the text message. We've got all the details on Frank's cell. The message from her, time sent, and her cell number. Then she changed into a disguise, shot Frank Sinclair, and sent herself a text message back to cover her tracks.
Disguise?
We have video of a woman in a red wig coming down the service hallway.
But Lori was discovered right next to the bot. Hold on a second, this doesn't make sense. If she took the time to send herself a text message from Frank's phone, she must have known that the police would be able to trace the call she made to him first. And if she was going to kill him, why get caught next to the body? Much less, why kill him there at all? There must have been easier places, much easier places than a crowded dog show banquet.
Because she was hoping that the sheer craziness of the location would make her look innocent.
That sounds like a lot of hooey.
Hooey? And here I thought you were all modern with a pocket full of technology. Anyway, tell that to the DA.
Yeah, fine. Okay, well, where's the motive? They broke up 8 months ago. Why shoot him now?
I take it she didn't mention their big fight a couple of weeks back?
No, she didn't.
Didn't think so. And there's one more thing, the wig.
The wig.
A long blonde hair was extracted from the webbing. Yes, it was a match. It was Lori Carter's hair in the wig. You still think it's hooey? And how do you explain your client holding the gun?
She just found a body. She was in shock. She didn't know what she was doing.
In shock? Oh, come on, Mac. We've got her fingerprints on the gun. In a few hours, we'll have the results of the paraffin test. If it comes back that Carter had cordite on her skin, I'm not sure you've got a leg to stand on.
Mac frowns. Laurie and Mac have a beverage in the kitchen of her smart single-story house.
So tell me about the text message.
Well, like I said, I got a message to meet Frank.
Did you send him a text message that day?
No.
Someone did. And the police have a record showing it originated from your cell phone.
Laurie gives a start.
That's ridiculous. I had my phone with me all day. I didn't send him a message. I can't imagine how anybody else could have.
He stares at her thoughtfully.
What about your relationship with Frank? When we first met, you said he was your ex-boyfriend. You failed to mention he was married. And that you were having an affair with him.
Our relationship's been over for 8 months, Mr. McBride. I got over Frank a long time ago.
Yet you just had an argument with him a couple of weeks ago.
It was no big deal. Every couple of months, Frank would come to me and say he missed me. And then he needed me back. But by then, I had stopped listening.
Mac turns away from Laurie and leans an arm over the back of his chair, frowning. Mac pulls up in a parking bay next to a stone wall outside the country club in his silver pickup truck. Young Phil's sleek charcoal grey open-top sports model is parked in front of him. Phil gets out of his car and checks his watch as Mac joins him.
You're just so quick. Dr. Roberta?
I did. She called ahead. They're expecting us.
The crime scene is sectioned off with yellow tape. Mac glances at a CCTV camera.
Why did she run back down the hall?
Excuse me?
She could have killed him and just ran outside. No one would have been the wiser. And she chose, though, to go back down the hall where she definitely would be seen by the security cameras.
Mac gives the crime scene a puzzled look.
We gotta get copies of that footage from Roberta.
Outside.
You know, if Lori didn't commit this murder, then someone has to be framing her.
That's right. And that person would have had to send Frank a text message from Lori's phone.
So she'd be caught in exactly the wrong place at the wrong time. But didn't Lori say that she had her cell phone on her all day long?
I did. Not only that, they'd have had to get hold of Lori's hair to stick in the wig. You know, that doesn't just take planning. That takes an evil mind.
At the cars.
You know what, I gotta tell you, that's just about the worst.
What exactly?
Framing someone. I mean, committing a cold-blooded murder, knowing that you're gonna stand by quietly while somebody else spends the rest of their lives in jail? Well, you know what? We can't help the dead guy, but maybe we can help Lori. Maybe at the Sinclair house, okay?
Rosa, a maid, opens the door of the opulent Sinclair home to Phil and Mac.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have an appointment with Mrs. Sinclair.
Mr. McBride?
Mm-hmm.
Please come in. She's expecting you.
Rosa takes McBride's proffered business card and guides them to a living room one step below the hall.
Please, have a seat. I'll let Mrs. Sinclair know that you're here.
Thank you.
They sit on a gold-coloured sofa with Regency stripes. A long-haired terrier pops its head around a corner. It's followed by Rosa, who wheels Sarah down a short ramp into the room. Phil and Mac stand.
Mr. McBride.
Mrs. Sinclair, we hate to intrude on you at a time like this.
Nonetheless, here you are.
Mrs. Sinclair, I hope...
Please sit down.
Thank you.
Mrs. Sinclair, I hope that you can appreciate that we have a duty to our client.
Your client.
I understand how difficult things have been for you.
Do you understand?
What exactly would you like us to understand?
February 13th, last year. Day before Valentine's Day. I find out my husband is having an affair with your client.
A flashback. Night. Sarah runs out of the house to a silver saloon.
I was upset. I was angry. I wanted to confront him.
She fires up the engine, turns on the headlamps, and zooms out of the drive of the house at speed.
But as I was driving, I realized I wanted to tell him now. So I called him on my cell.
I know about Lori, Frank. How could you do this to me? How could you betray me like this?
That's when it happened.
see the truck pull out. Have you ever broken a bone, Mr. McBride?
A few times.
When I was a kid, I fell out of a tree. Broke my left femur. Even though it hurt at the time, I knew I'd recover when the doctor put two pins in my leg.
But I knew I wouldn't fully recover from these injuries.
They patched me up pretty well. My remaining kidney works fine. My hair's grown out over the scars. I thought I'd lost everything. But then something wonderful happened. Frank broke off the affair. He was at my bedside morning, noon, and night. He did everything for me. Never a complaint. I had my marriage back. And in some ways, we were closer than ever. And then a couple of weeks ago, your client came sniffing around him again, begging him to resume the affair. Frank told her it was over, and I guess she couldn't take the rejection. It wasn't enough that she did this to me. She had to take him away from me forever.
Sarah looks scornful. Phil pops on a pair of sunglasses as he and Mac leave the house.
That went well.
I want you to find out who Sarah Sinclair's doctor is.
You're not suggesting she had anything to do with the murder, are you? She's in a wheelchair.
Gives her a perfect alibi, doesn't it?
That's pretty cold.
Phil, look. Let's remember Laurie Carter was framed. This wasn't a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. This was premeditated, meticulously timed. And unlike the courtroom, except for my client, I'm going to consider everybody guilty until proven innocent. If we don't think like that, we might as well tell Laurie to pack her bags because she's going to prison for the next 30 years. See you back at the office.
Mac good-naturedly claps Phil on the arm and drives away from the Sinclair home in his pickup. Short-haired Phil, casually dressed in jeans, a yellow shirt and a pinstripe jacket, follows him out of the drive a few moments later. He makes a left out of the drive and heads slowly down the road. He slows as he passes the Sinclair back gate where dark-haired Rosa, wearing a navy blue cardi over a pale blue shirt with grey trousers, is loading a semi-transparent white plastic bag into a green wheelie bin adjacent to the property gate. Then she goes back inside. Phil pulls up and gets out of the car. He heads over to the bin while cautiously looking behind him. He cranes his neck towards the Sinclair home, then lifts the lid of the tall, faded green plastic bin. He lifts out the white plastic bag and closes the bin lid. The bag contains a number of folded items. He gives it a cursory glance, then takes it back to his car. At Laurie's, Max sits in a wicker armchair opposite Captain, who's lying panting on a flower-patterned sofa. Laurie brings in a couple of drinks in tall glasses and sits next to Captain.
Here you go.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'd like to talk a little more about you and Frank Sinclair.
Okay.
Before you broke up, how long were you together?
A year and a half.
How did it start?
We would bump into each other at the various dog shows. We would have a drink together after a show, and then he started calling me. I realized he had more than drinks on his mind.
What did you do?
I told him I would never have an affair with a married man. Which is when he said that his marriage was over. And that he'd fallen in love with me.
Did you fall in love with him?
Hook, line, and sinker.
Did you think he loved you?
In his way.
Which was?
Having your cake and eating it too way.
So he wanted you, but he had no intention of leaving his wife.
That's why I ended it.
What was the argument about?
Please, Laurie. Sweetheart. I'm going crazy without you.
I told you, Frank. I'm not going to do this anymore.
But I love you.
I love you too. But it's so dishonest. And I feel cheap and dirty. And it's not fair to me or to Sarah.
If you loved me, you'd want to be with me.
If you loved me, you would leave Sarah. And I know now that's never going to happen.
It's not as simple as that.
Yes, it is.
Oh, come on!
To hell with you, Frank.
Yeah. To hell with you, too.
Fine.
Mac appears as a witness in the flashback.
Those are the last words we spoke to each other.
Were you aware that Sarah knew about the affair?
No, of course not.
You know, I need you to start doing some thinking for me.
Okay.
Whoever did this, murdered Frank, framed you, knew about your life. They knew about your schedule. They definitely knew about the affair, maybe even knew about the argument. I would say the odds are that you're in regular contact with this person.
Laurie frowns. Mac parks next to Phil's car in the drive of the Sinclair and Hastings Veterinary Clinic. Barry Hastings shows them into his office.
Have a seat, gentlemen.
Thank you.
How can I help?
Well, we are just trying to gather as much information as we can. Do you mind my asking how long you and Frank were partners?
About 5 years. I met him when he moved to L.A. He was looking for a vet's practice, and my old partner had just left. Good riddance. But frankly, I wasn't doing too well on my own, so we teamed up.
Well, it seems to have worked out.
Worked out great. Frank made an impact right away. Clients liked him. Animals loved him. Never looked back.
Barry looks upset.
Sorry. I just can't believe it. We worked so well together. Business was growing in ways I never imagined. Not to mention he was my friend.
Did Frank have any problems that you were aware of?
Well, there was one thing that was a little weird.
Weird?
Yeah, he was always a very calm guy, you know? But in the past couple of weeks, he'd been getting these phone calls that bothered him. And then this letter arrived.
Frank? Everything all right?
Everything's fine. Excuse me.
A flashback. Frank looks worried.
Did you get a look at what was in the letter?
No.
Any chance we could look through his office, see maybe if the letter's still there?
I've already done that. Whatever it was, Frank did not want it in the office.
Any idea when these calls came in?
Not really, just off and on. Well, I'm sorry to have to cut this short, but I do have other patients.
I understand completely. Thanks for your time.
Certainly. If you want to talk about anything else, just give Debbie a call.
Thanks, Doctor. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
They go. Barry picks up a phone. In the practice reception area...
Do you remember Frank getting the letter that upset him?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he really freaked out.
Can you tell us anything about the letter?
Like what?
Like how it was mailed, regular mail, FedEx.
Well, I found it on the mat when I opened up, so somebody must have dropped it off in person.
How did Barry and Frank get along?
Oh, I mean, they were great friends.
Great. So listen, if you think of anything, would you mind giving us a call? Thank you.
Excuse me. I remembered something. One of the calls that bugged Frank came in on the same day that Gainer Lord's toy poodle broke his leg. I had to set it that afternoon.
Oh, yeah, let me check.
It was a couple weeks back.
Here we go. Lord Poodle. It was on the 15th.
The 15th. Thanks. That could be useful.
You might want to talk to Judy Maxwell. Best dog trainer in the business. Everyone on the show circuit uses her. And she's good friends with Sarah Sinclair.
Great. You have an address by any chance?
Yeah, Debbie will get that for you.
Thanks, Doc. You know what? Maybe I can use my contact at the phone company to do some cross-referencing. Maybe we can find out where that call came from. Great. Thanks, Debbie.
With a pleasant smile, Debbie hands them a slip of paper and they go. Back at Mac's office...
Couldn't those calls have actually come from Laurie?
Phil sits at his desk.
I don't know Laurie Carter that well yet, but I just can't imagine Frank Sinclair being intimidated by her.
So what does that leave us with?
Not very much. But it's early in the game, right? Tomorrow we'll track down Judy Maxwell and see if she can shed some light on somebody else that might have a grudge against Frank Sinclair. I got it.
He takes a call from Roberta.
McBride and Associates.
Hey, Mac. Look, just calling to see if you wanted to get in on the pool at the precinct.
Pool? What pool? A little late for football, isn't it?
Well, since you just got Jeffries as your trial judge, we're taking bets to see how long you can last without seeing the inside of a jail cell.
Very funny.
He hangs up. To Phil.
Jeffries is our trial judge.
Phil rolls his eyes.
Oh, well. Dr. Gordon, I want to thank you for taking the time to see me.
Well, I can only spare a few minutes. I'm doing surgery.
I understand. I'm trying to find out a little more about Sarah Sinclair's injuries.
What would you like to know?
Why isn't she walking?
Mr. McBride, this is confidential.
This is not just idle snooping on my part. I'm involved in a murder investigation. I don't want you to divulge any confidential information. I'm just curious about her injuries. If necessary, I could get a subpoena.
They're in Dr. Gordon's office. At Max, Phil interrogates an answer machine.
I'm just going to see Mrs. Sinclair's doctor. I'll call you when I'm done.
Know something about x-rays? These were taken a few weeks ago. Sarah suffered severe injuries to the hip bone. See, severe breaks here and here. Those are why she'll never walk again.
Is it possible I could borrow these x-rays, show them to an independent medical expert?
Out of the question.
Sorry to disturb you, but Dr. Rahman needs to talk to you for a second about a consult.
Ask him if he can wait for a minute.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Dr. Gordon, but he says he needs to speak to you now.
All right, tell him I'll be right out. Excuse me.
Yes, certainly. Please, take your time.
Gray-haired, thin-faced Dr. Gordon goes, leaving Mac next to a fluorescent display showing an x-ray of her pelvis. Mac frowns, then pats his pocket and fishes out his mobile phone. He looks at the display, then glances furtively at the office door. He takes a picture of the X-ray with his mobile phone. He shoots another glance at the door, then takes a second picture. Dr. Gordon returns.
Okay. Sorry about that.
All right.
Well, where was I?
All right, listen, Phil, I'm just pulling up to Judy's. I'll call you when I get done talking to her.
Judy, who has light brown curly hair, opens her front door to Mac.
Hi, you must be McBride.
I am, hi. Thank you for seeing me.
Sure, come on in.
Thanks. Oh, good. Thank you.
She shows him into a small home office.
Can I get you something to drink?
I'm fine. No, it's all right. What I'm trying to do is build what I call a timeline, basically figuring out who saw Frank, when they saw him, the day he was murdered, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So when was the last time you saw him?
Must have been around lunchtime, I would say 12-ish.
And his body was discovered at 1:30.
Straight after lunch, everybody started moving around, and I slipped out. I know this sounds crazy, but I spent ages looking for a ladies' room that was not out of order. And then when I came back, Sarah was looking for him. And then we heard the scream, and then I rushed backstage with Barry.
And you were friends with both Frank and Sarah?
Well, Sarah more than Frank. We used to see each other at the dog shows, and, you know, we just hit it off. When I first met Sarah, she was having a lot of problems with her German Shepherd, Lewis. And after a few months of training with me, he won Best in Breed. So we became very close, and I've trained all her dogs, including Dexter.
You were around when Frank met Sarah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Sarah had had a lot of boyfriends, but Frank just swept her off her feet. She felt he was the only one who really loved her, you know, not just for her money.
You knew about the affair between Frank and Lori?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew. That's, you know, how it got back to Sarah.
Were you surprised that Frank and Sarah stayed together?
No, not really. It was basically a good marriage by L.A. standards.
Wow. Looks like Sarah's dog.
They're brothers, actually. This is Rudy. Rudy is like the slow, steady type, and Dexter's a little more feisty. But Rudy is very good at old-fashioned dog tricks. Rudy, dead.
Rudy, the long-haired terrier, lies down and stretches out at Mac's feet, playing dead.
That's very impressive. Well, I'm sorry. I've taken enough of your time, but if you think of anything else, do you mind giving me a call?
Sure, no problem.
Mac steps out onto Judy's red brick front porch. He's casually dressed in jeans and a pale blue sweater. He picks up a dark blue and red golfing umbrella from the porch. He takes out his mobile and makes a call.
Hey Mac, what's up?
Something just occurred to me. What if this wasn't about Frank?
What do you mean?
What if this murder was a way of getting at Lori?
The only person I can think of who really hates me is my ex-boyfriend, Michael.
Michael?
Michael White. But I haven't seen him in a couple of years.
Tell me something about him.
We lived together for a while. He got so jealous and aggressive. In the end, I had to have a restraining order to keep him away. Last I heard, he moved to Vegas to become a dealer.
At the office.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wiggins. Bye-bye.
Phil clears the call on a cordless phone, then dials another number. At the police station, Mac's mobile phone rings.
Hey, Phil.
Yo, Mac. Hey, got the second opinion on Sarah Sinclair's x-rays.
And?
And she definitely cannot walk.
Guess you were right.
Guess I was.
Talk to you later.
Mac mouths a curse to himself. In her office, he and Roberta look at a computer.
How's the Hui theory going?
Very well. I'm leaving no stone unturned. You guys should try it sometime.
What?
Investigating.
I'll let that one pass. Here we go. It says here a restraining order was issued against him in March of 2004.
The current address?
There it is. In the valley on Balboa. Looks like he moved back a couple of months ago.
Well, I guess Las Vegas didn't work out. Great. Oh, listen, by the way, I still haven't gotten the security tapes from the country club.
I'll chase Rodriguez.
Hey, Roberta. You're a pal.
That's an understatement.
Mac smiles wickedly at her and goes. In a parking lot, Michael White gets out of a dark blue saloon, locks the car with an infrared remote, and heads towards an apartment block. He's dressed in dark jeans and a grey t-shirt with trainers. As he approaches his own front door, he walks past Mac, who's leaning idly in another doorway, arms folded.
Hey, Michael. You're supposed to be living in Las Vegas. What happened?
You a cop?
X.
Mac approaches Michael.
My client says you were living in Vegas.
Your client?
Lori Carter.
Well, I hear she's in a little bit of trouble.
When's the last time you saw her?
A couple years. Before Vegas.
You haven't seen her at all since.
Look, I don't blame Lori for what she did with the restraining order and all. Okay, I was in a really bad place back then. But I don't appreciate you coming around here bugging me about her, okay? I'm over that.
Michael gets out his keys.
Hey, Michael, where were you Monday?
I was here.
Can anybody vouch for you?
No.
Michael goes inside, slamming his front door behind him.
Nice guy.
At the Sinclair home...
I know you've answered all these questions before, but what time did you last see him?
We just finished lunch. It was 1 o'clock. Everybody started moving around, chatting. I spoke to a few friends, and then it felt stuffy in there, so I decided to go out and get a breath of fresh air.
And what time exactly was that?
A little after one.
And did you see Frank again after you left the table?
Maybe across the room, I don't remember.
Excuse me. Mrs. Sinclair is a bank, I think.
You'll have to excuse me.
Certainly.
Rosa wheels Sarah up the metal ramp and out of the living room. Max sits patiently and watches them go. Then he gets up and looks furtive. He walks up to the ramp and peers in their direction. Then he steps up onto the upper floor level of the hall. Still shooting glances after his hosts, he heads towards a study occupied by a large wooden desk and vintage leather chairs with deep red hide. He moves aside a chair behind the desk, then slides open desk drawers and looks inside. Sarah is on the telephone in the kitchen.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What I say was, the Boo-Boo funds and the building funds, the city, and for...
I'm sorry, what did you say?
The bogus caller is Phil. In the study, Mac takes a wooden box of cigars from a drawer and finds a key with a black tag inside. Sarah's dog wanders in and stares at Mac. The dog wags its tail as it whoops and Mac tries to shush the dog. Mac puts the box away. In the kitchen...
Well, hold please.
Mac quickly slides the desk drawers closed. Rosa returns Sarah to the living room where Mac is sitting innocently on the sofa with a magazine. The dog sits in front of him with a toy in its mouth.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that. Some confusion at the bank. To tell you the truth, I got the distinct impression they had no idea what they were talking about.
I know what you mean.
Sarah strokes the dog. At the office...
You know, the way that this key was hidden under those cigars... I don't think Frank Sinclair even wanted his wife, Sarah, to know about it.
Okay. Long shot. Gym locker key?
Wow. Possibility. Tell you what. Why don't we start with the ones closest to his house?
And I'm assuming by we you mean me.
Yeah. Max smiles and tosses the reluctant Phil a Yellow Pages book. Phil's car is parked outside a posh leisure complex. A US flag hangs from a pole and two people go by carrying golf bags. Phil enters a locker room populated with pale brown wooden lockers, just as a silver-haired man in grey sweats leaves. Phil walks along the row of lockers looking for locker numbers. He finds locker 43, which matches the number on the black key tag. He unlocks a brass padlock, pulls open the door, and finds a newspaper clipping in an envelope in the otherwise empty interior. He takes the envelope and goes. At the office, Phil and Mac look at the clipping. The partial headline is, "Crash victim was drunk," says Emmy. There's a Lakers basketball story on the back.
We've got no date, no name of the newspaper, really nothing to even tell us what this headline means.
Yeah. Lakers Pistons. Well, at least if we knew when that game happened, we'd have a win. That'd be a start.
Shouldn't be too hard. Oh, hey, did you see that?
No.
Roberta left it for you.
Oh, yeah, you know what? This must be the tapes from the security camera.
Debbie knocks and comes in.
Hi.
Hi. You said I should get in touch if I thought of anything?
Yeah.
Well, how about that Barry Hastings is a two-faced liar who's laughing all the way to the bank?
Mac grins.
Come on in.
Mac gets a hot drink for himself and for Debbie.
There you are. So, Barry sold the business.
Mm-hmm. He's been wanting to sell for ages.
I mean, that is not the impression he gave us.
I said he's a two-faced liar. All right, look, Frank was dead set against selling. I mean, they would argue about it all the time, yelling and screaming at each other. But in the end, Frank went behind Barry's back and told DeWitt Braun he was never going to sell, no matter what the price. And then, a few days later, Frank dies.
And the deal's back on?
Mm-hmm. He couldn't sign those papers fast enough.
Okay, so why didn't you tell me this before?
Because Barry asked me not to. He said that he was going to promote me, but instead of promoting me, he canned me.
Phil's at his computer.
Is this going to get Barry in any kind of trouble?
Mine.
Good.
Okay, I found it. Lakers beat the Pistons 110-90, February 18th, 1998.
Good work.
To Debbie.
Love the Lakers.
You know, we still don't even know where this crash happened or who it even involved. All we know is that it predates Frank's arrival in L.A. and that it was enough to scare the living daylights out of him.
Wow. Sic transit gloria mundi.
What does that mean?
It's Latin. For Barry, sure didn't waste any time.
So I sold my business. It's not a crime.
No, neither is lying to us about your intentions of a happy future in business with Frank, but it still looks bad.
Yeah, a jury might think that gives you a motive.
Frank never wanted to sell, did he?
He wouldn't even consider selling. I could never understand it.
Gotta be honest, we've done a little digging into your credit history.
It seems you were broke, and the sale of this place really got you out of a hole.
Do you have any idea what it costs to keep up appearances? State-of-the-art equipment, the latest Porsche? You're damn right I was broke. Oh, and let's not forget, I didn't have a super rich wife to bail me out.
Barry, where were you when Frank was murdered?
Probably at the bar. I just had another argument with him, and the last place I wanted to be was anywhere near him.
Phil gives Barry a grim stare.
Wait a minute. I didn't kill him, if that's what you're suggesting.
Well, you know what? A jury might think you had 2.6 million reasons to do just that.
Well, prove it.
Roberta Hansen arrives at Mac's office.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Ted. Nice surprise.
What do you mean, surprise? You sent me a text message asking me to come over.
What? No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
She takes out her mobile.
See?
Mac looks at the phone.
Huh. Well, I would get my cell phone fixed because I didn't send you a message.
Mac.
Mac looks at his own phone.
Yes, you did. What kind of message is that?
What, Matt? I didn't send you that message.
What? All right, then who did?
I did.
I'm sorry. What?
Mac and Roberta cross to Phil's desk. Phil taps at his computer keyboard.
You can go to your cell company's website and type in any text message that you want to send to anybody's cell phone. All you need is a number that you want to send it to.
And the website walks you through it?
You just fill in the blanks. You type in the number you want to send it to, the actual text message, and then any reply number.
So hold on a second, it doesn't have to be the actual sender's cell phone number?
No.
So that's how Frank Sinclair got a text message from Lori Carter?
Well, Lori Carter had her cell phone on her the entire day.
Wait, you're gonna need more than that to keep Lori Carter out of prison. And Phil, next time you want to do a show and tell, just pick up the phone and call me and we can talk about it. You could have saved me a trip over here.
Oh, don't be angry. I encourage him.
What is this?
Somebody sent that to Frank Sinclair a couple of weeks before he died.
What does it mean? Victim was drunk, says M.E.
Don't know, that's what we're trying to figure out.
All we know is that it freaked Frank out.
Oh, guys, a headline. Phil figured out the date from the basketball score.
February 18th, 1998.
But we don't know what was in the article. We don't know where the crash happened.
And without that information, we have no connection to Frank.
Well, you know what? You haven't been looking hard enough. You have a photocopier that enlarges?
Yeah.
Where?
The conference room.
Follow me?
She pins an enlargement on a board.
Okay. The top of the first line of the article, just beneath the headline.
Yeah.
They can make out some of the capital letters, but the rest of it.
Right, that's, we've got an M, right? Second word maybe, it could be an E. Well, you know what? Medical examiner.
That definitely goes with the headline.
Yeah.
Which means that the next two words most certainly would be the name of the examiner.
We find that out, we've got our who, then we just have to discover the where.
That gives us our connection to Frank.
Time for takeout.
Mac's dog joins them for junk food.
By the way, this doesn't count.
What?
You still have to buy me dinner.
Is this better? Look, dinner and a floor show. Come on.
Phil, you pass the onion rings?
What?
Phil.
Ow! Hey!
The dog watches Mac eat an onion ring.
All right, so I think think we agreed that the first name is Charles.
Yes.
All right? Charles.
Second one starts with a B, I think.
No. Maybe. But I'm going to say D.
A-N. Or maybe it's D-O-N Donaldson. That's it. I can't tell anymore.
All right. What?
He turns to Phil.
Nice. Charles.
Phil is asleep on the sofa with the dog Jesse nestled in his lap. Morning. Roberta has joined Phil on the sofa. She stirs. Mac is working at the notice board trying combinations of fragmented letters.
Definitely not that one.
Oh my god.
Maybe that one either.
What time is it?
She consults her watch.
Mac, I've gotta go.
Mac isn't listening. Roberta frowns.
Thank you very much, Roberta. Thank you for stopping by and helping us out solve this puzzle.
Thank you, Roberta. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
She glances at the still sleeping Phil, then at Mac.
Get some sleep.
Huh? Yeah.
Bye.
She goes. Mac sits on the sofa next to Phil, slurping a drink and staring bleary-eyed at a whiteboard with the letter combinations written on it in black marker. Three names have been written and crossed out. A fourth partial name is written with dashes representing missing letters. Mac's eyes widen. He sits bolt upright and wide awake, silently muttering letters and nodding to himself. He jumps up, crosses to the board, and fills in the last few missing letters, forming the name Detweiler. He takes a step back triumphantly.
Gotta be. Phil!
No. I'm trying to identify a certified medical examiner's practice in 1998. Yes, I'll hold.
Phil's on the phone. Mac comes in with a bag of pastries, followed by Jesse.
I think I'm finally getting somewhere. Gina passed me off to Marcia, who put me back on with Gina, who then gave me over to Richard, who's been really helpful to me. Hello? Yes, I'm here. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. All right, so there was a Charles Detweiler practicing in Sacramento in the 90s, retired in 1999.
Great. What's next?
Well, every major newspaper archives their content online, so now that we know the paper, the rest of the story shouldn't be a problem.
Great. You type, I'll make the coffee.
Night. Phil is at the computer. Mac is on the sofa looking at CCTV images on a monitor. Jesse lies next to him.
You all right?
Yeah. I gotta take a walk.
You gotta get some fresh air.
All right.
Phil yawns and stretches, then he goes. Mac uses a remote control to shuttle and pause the CCTV footage. He pauses it on an image of Michael White in the service corridor. Mac smirks to himself.
Well, Michael, you lied to me.
He comes to a decision and pats the dozing dog.
Jesse, Phil will be back soon, all right? Stay here.
Michael, wearing a white shirt, a beige jacket and brown cords, mooches out of his house and makes for his car. Mac, wearing a beige shirt, dark blue trousers and a grey jacket, is leaning against a white garage door, watching him. As Michael fires up the car and reverses out of his parking spot, Mac thrusts his hands into his pockets and moves forward to intercept him.
Hey, Michael! You know what? It's a really bad idea to lie to me. You were at the awards banquet. You were seen on the security camera.
Mac patiently turns away as Michael zooms off.
Well, I guess I'll wait.
At the office, Phil sits at his desk, searching the newspaper archives online, making rapid clicks with the buttons on his mouse. On his desk are various bits of stationery, including a pair of fluorescent yellow markers in a white mug and a tub of eraser-headed pencils. He finds an article headed Horror at Fabrizi Stables and a picture of Frank Sinclair. He picks up the phone and dials.
Yeah, hey, Phil.
Hey, where did you go? You were gone when I got back.
Yeah, I had to, go talk to somebody. I gotta go.
Mac, I have something I have to tell you. Mac. Hello?
Mac has hung up. Phil returns to the article. The subheader is Elite School Closes After Vet's Misdiagnosis. Michael returns to his parking spot.
Hey, Michael, you know what I think would be a good idea? A little truth.
Okay. I was at the award banquet.
The saloon lurches forward a little as Michael gets out.
All I wanted to do
I wanted to talk to her.
Why?
To try to get things back on track. You know, maybe get her to lift the restraining order. I mean, the trouble was, every time I would get close to talking to her, someone else would get there first.
A flashback. Michael tries to approach Laurie at the dog show, but she goes into the dining room to collect her rosette. He lurks behind her while she's being interviewed by the press.
I'm just so thrilled. This has been one of the best days of my life. And for Captain, too, I think.
Then I lost sight of him. I got sick of waiting, so I just left. Had enough of those dog people. And then I heard about the murder. No way am I going to come forward and involve myself. I mean, Laurie with a dead guy? Me? Under a restraining order? Come on. I swear, I didn't kill that guy.
Michael shakes his head earnestly. Mac gives him a stare, then goes. Night. Mac's 4x4 is parked in the street outside his office block. A light is on in the office. Mac saunters in. Phil is still riveted to his computer display.
Hey.
Hey.
Anything?
Okay. So, on February 5th, 1998, a woman named Carla Fabrizi was killed in a car accident. She was drunk.
Crash victim was drunk, says ME.
Right. Not something too terribly out of the ordinary for Carla. You see, Carla turned to the sauce after she and her husband lost their business.
Uh-huh. Which was?
Stables. They bred racehorses. And everything started to go south after a vet misdiagnosed equine viral arteritis. Foals died. A couple of pregnant mares aborted. The stallions became untouchable. Guess who the vet was?
Phil hands Mac a printout.
Frank Sinclair, or Frank Reynolds, as he was called then.
Changed his name.
Probably didn't want the disgrace following him around, so he packed up everything he had to his name, hightailed it to L.A., reinvented himself as a regular vet. Charmed Barry, charmed Sarah, made a whole new life for himself.
And then somebody found out.
That's my guess. I figure they sent him the article to let him know they were on to him.
Probably tried to blackmail him in the process. Who was that?
Well...
Phil leans forward on his elbows.
Carla Fabrizi had a sister.
Find her.
I found her.
Judy Maxwell answers her front doorbell to Phil and Mac.
We know about Carla.
Judy looks stunned. In her kitchen...
Carla and Jerry didn't have kids. You know, those horses were like their family. So when the foals started dying and then the mares lost their babies, it just broke her heart. And then they went bust. And for Jerry, this was the worst failure. I mean, he became withdrawn and depressed. Carla couldn't even talk to him. And, you know, it wasn't long before she started to drink. And I used to tell her to be careful, but I mean, you know what drunks are like. They have no idea how drunk they are half the time. So, you know, the way I see it, Craig was to blame. And I would see him happily married, rich, successful, and all I could think about was Carla.
So you decided to blackmail him?
Of course not. I don't want his money.
So what did you want?
I wanted him to know that someone was on to him. I wanted to have power over him. I enjoyed watching him squirm.
Did you kill him?
No. I wanted him alive. I wanted him to pay for what he did to Carla. Killing him would have let him off way too easy.
She wears a dark blue-green cardi over a white top. Outside, Mac rejoins Phil in the pickup truck.
Well, it certainly explains why Frank was so dead set against selling. I mean, anybody willing to pay that kind of money would double-check his credentials. They're going to find out that he wasn't who he said he was. He wouldn't take that risk.
You think she killed him?
Mac strokes his chin.
She's got motive coming out of her ears. She's smart enough. Well, framing Laurie, though, where does that fit in?
You know, it's like we said, I think we need to think outside the box.
Okay, meaning?
Meaning that having this whole extra element of the crime, the framing, it's sort of like we're automatically assuming that the killer had some sort of double motive. You know, that they not only wanted Frank dead, but that they wanted Laurie punished. What if that's not the case? What if this is just some sort of elaborate scheme to throw us off the scent of the real killer who doesn't really care what happens to Laurie, and as long as Frank Sinclair or Frank Reynolds or whatever his name happens to be, pays for what he did?
Wow. That's impressive. You come up with that all on your own?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently I've learned something from the master of deviance, misdirection, and obfuscation.
About time.
At the office, they look at the camera tapes. A thin figure with long straight hair walks down the service corridor.
Who is that? You know, whoever it is, there's something that... just not right about this. Why did the killer go back and go past the security cameras?
So we'd think it was Laurie.
Oh, the wig did that, didn't it? The killer could have stuck Laurie's hair in the wig, still gotten out of there unnoticed. Something else. It's like the answer's staring at me and I can't see it.
Jesse vies for Mac's attention.
What?
Can we take him out?
Would you? That'd be great.
Mac uses the remote to shuttle the camera tape. Phil takes Jesse's lead from a table.
Come here, Jesse. Come here, buddy.
I got it.
What?
The killer went past the camera so that we would see her walking.
Phil and Mac sit at the computer, which is showing the X-ray image from the doctor's office. Mac jabs a pencil at the screen.
All right, right there. Remember Sarah told us that she broke her leg when she was a child?
Yeah, right. She said that she had two pins placed in her left femur.
Uh-huh. Where are the pins?
There are none. Phil frowns.
This isn't her X-ray.
Mac shakes his head.
Bingo. Take another visit to Dr. Gordon, is in order.
Dr. Gordon fidgets nervously in his office.
I'm sure there must be some kind of mistake.
Really? Dr. Gordon, you spent 10 minutes explaining an X-ray to me. You're actually telling me you didn't know that X-ray didn't belong to Sarah Sinclair? Your amnesia wouldn't have anything to do with the $50,000 paid out of her account. The week after you showed me that X-ray.
I don't know anything about Mrs. Sinclair's finances.
So if we were to subpoena your bank records, we wouldn't find a corresponding deposit with the same amount?
You know, Doctor, I think the real question here is, are you going to take the fall for her?
Okay. Okay. She paid me to keep quiet about her recovery.
And she must have known we'd check up on her.
Look, it was her idea to have the wrong X-rays ready. Just in case.
Dr. Gordon, would you like to continue practicing medicine?
The doctor nods.
Then I suggest you testify to the truth in court.
The doctor gives Mac a rueful look. At Laurie's...
My God, she must hate me so much.
The way we figured it, Sarah had to start planning this right after her accident.
Mm-hmm. She would have had to hide her recovery from everyone.
Including Frank.
But how did she arrange to get my hair in the wig? What about the text message from Frank?
Well, that we call reasonable doubt.
Which means we have no actual proof.
So then how do you do it?
It's like a little game. In court, I paint a picture of what actually happened. The DA objects, but in the process, you hope the jury realizes that it is, in fact, what happened. But it's not just games. And we do have the doctor. Once I get him on the stand and we destroy Sarah's credibility, it's only logical that the jury will think the only reason she could have had to hide her disability was to create the perfect cover for the perfect crime.
In court before Judge Jeffries...
My analysis of the DNA of the hair, which my colleague CSI Rodriguez recovered from the webbing inside the red wig found in the ladies' room of the country club, proved to be an identical match to the defendant's.
Which means it's the defendant's hair that was caught in the wig.
Correct.
No further questions.
Phil steps up.
Mr. Miles, is there any way of knowing when that hair may have become trapped in the wig?
No.
So, could it have been there for days prior to the awards banquet?
I suppose so.
Now, in your field of expertise, could you tell if the hair had been deliberately placed in the wig, as opposed to, you know, just sort of being there from general wear?
No.
So, in your expert opinion, could someone else have deliberately placed Laurie Carter's hair in the webbing of the wig?
Objection. Calls for speculation.
I will allow it. The witness may answer the question.
It would be possible.
Thank you. No further questions.
Assistant DA Sullivan.
Dr. Hastings, what was your relationship with the deceased?
We were business partners in a veterinary practice here in Los Angeles.
So you worked very closely with Dr. Sinclair?
Yes.
Were you aware of his affair with the defendant?
Yes. It had gone on for well over a year, and it had become pretty difficult to hide.
Did he ever confide in you about his affair?
No, but Laurie would come by the office nearly every day. often without her dog. So it didn't take long for me to become suspicious of the relationship.
Do you know who ended the affair?
No. I only know that the end was sudden. Lori came to me one day and asked if I would take over care of her dog, Captain.
Did she appear to harbor any ill will towards Dr. Sinclair?
No. No, none that I could see.
Let's move to the day of the murder. Were you the one who discovered the body of Dr. Sinclair?
No. I was in the hall with Judy Maxwell when we heard a scream. We went down to investigate. We found a hysterical waitress, and she pointed me in the direction of the body.
What exactly did she say to you?
Well, I believe it was, "Down there, be careful."
And what did you find down there?
I found Lori kneeling over Frank's body with the gun in her hand.
No further questions.
Your witness, Mr. McBride.
Sullivan sits down, looking smug.
Dr. Hastings, did you see Lori Carter actually fire the gun?
No. No, I did not.
No more questions, Your Honor.
The witness is excused.
The people would like to call Detective Roberta Hansen. Detective Hansen, can you describe for us the conditions under which the body of Frank Sinclair was discovered?
Mr. Sinclair was discovered by a waitress in the service hallway of the country club. He was already deceased, the result of a single gunshot wound.
And was the defendant also present where the body was found?
Yes. Two witnesses saw Ms. Carter kneeled over the body with the murder weapon in her hand.
Was the weapon registered to Lori Carter?
No, the weapon belongs to a man who reported it missing in 2000. Most likely it was bought on the black market.
Was paraffin testing done on the defendant to determine if she had in fact fired the gun?
Yes. And a significant amount of gunpowder residue was detected on Ms. Carter's hands.
Did you find any secondary evidence to link Lori Carter with the murder?
Forensics determined that two text messages had been sent during the approximate time frame of the crime. First, from Ms. Carter's cell phone to Mr. Sinclair, asking him to meet her in the service hallway. And the second, with the same message, sent from the victim's cell phone to Ms. Carter herself.
And what conclusion, if any, were you able to draw from this?
That Ms. Carter lured Mr. Sinclair to the service hallway with the first text message, and then sent herself the second message to account for her presence near the body.
Your Honor, objection. Supposition?
Your Honor, it is Detective Hansen's job to do just that based on the evidence.
Overruled. You may proceed, Counselor.
Detective Hansen, were you able to ascertain any possible motive for the murder?
Well, Miss Carter carried on an 18-month affair with the victim, and several acquaintances were under the impression that she wanted to resume the affair. We also found a number of witnesses to a very public fight between the victim and Miss Carter that took place less than 2 weeks before the crime.
No further questions of this witness.
Mac approaches the witness stand.
Detective Hansen, when you tested Lori Carter for carditis, did you test her clothing as well as her hands?
Yes, but the paraffin tested positive only on her hands, not her clothes.
Strange. And was the residue localized to any specific part of her hands?
Yes, only the palm side of both hands.
Dr. Hansen, in your experience, doesn't usually discharging a weapon cause a cordite splatter to the chest, the wrist, the outside of the hands?
Well, it depends on the circumstances, but often, yes, cordite fans out from the weapon.
So, in testing, it is more likely to find cordite on the outside of one's hands as opposed to the palms once one has discharged a weapon?
Yes.
So, stand the reason that because Lori Carter's palms tested positive, not the outside of her hands, that's more indicative of someone who had picked up a weapon after it had been fired.
It's possible, yes.
A young, red-headed woman with glasses is on the witness stand.
Miss Cookson, you're a member of the Computer Science Department faculty at UCLA, is that correct?
I am.
And you also work as a consultant to a leading mobile phone company?
I do.
What do you advise them on?
Security and tracking.
Security and tracking of what?
SMS forgery, which is forging text messages.
Would you explain that to the court, please?
Objection, relevance.
Your Honor, one of the key components of the prosecutor's case is that Frank Sinclair received a text message from Lori Carter asking him to meet her backstage. I am trying to prove that it is relatively simple to send a text message to someone while actually concealing the identity of the actual sender.
This is preposterous.
I'll allow it.
Ms. Cookson, you were about to explain to us the methods of sending a text message.
There are a few ways. The most common is phone to phone, but another is computer to phone. All that's required is an internet connection.
So if I send someone a text message from my computer, does my phone number appear in it?
No, the software allows the sender to input a reply phone number of their choosing.
So I could send a text message to someone using someone else's number, and it would look like that person sent the message?
Absolutely.
Now, Just wanted to get this straight in my mind. I could send a text message from my computer and put in, say, the judge's phone number, making you think he was the sender.
Yes. And if I had his name and number programmed into my phone list, not only would a number appear, but so would his name. There would be no reason to believe that the judge didn't send me the message.
And for this, I would need what? A computer connected to the internet?
There are any number of methods to access the internet without a computer.
Such as?
Personal digital assistants, better known as PDAs, or a computer with a wireless card, which works through cellular cards or Ethernet cards, which allow people to access the internet remotely.
So, anyone with basic computer knowledge could possibly accomplish this?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Ms. Cookson. No further questions of this witness, Your Honor.
Court stands in recess.
Ms. Maxwell, in your statement you said the day of the banquet you spent about 25 minutes looking for a ladies' room.
That's true. It wasn't the most pleasant half hour of my life, I can tell you that.
A flashback.
What?
Isn't there a ladies' room right next to the banquet hall?
Yes, but I had to go look for another ladies' room.
Thank you. No more questions, Your Honor.
Mrs. Skinner, on the day of the Kennel Club Awards banquet, were any of the ladies' restrooms out of order?
No, sir.
How can you be so sure of that?
During a function in the banquet room, we check the facilities every hour during the event.
Okay, but how can you be assured that the inspections have actually taken place?
The attendant will make a note of the inspection on the schedules that we keep behind each door, giving time and details of any problems.
Your Honor, relevance?
What are you trying to flesh out?
Max smiles.
Yes, Your Honor. If the court would allow us a little latitude, the purpose of our questions will become apparent shortly.
I'm watching you, Mr. McBride.
Like a hawk. Thank you, Phil. Mrs. Skinner, is this a copy of the schedule from that day?
It is.
And there are details of the inspections on that sheet?
They are.
Did any member of your staff put an out-of-order sign on that ladies' room?
No, sir. No one from my staff did that.
So, if there was an out-of-order sign on that door, it was put there by someone other than a member of your staff.
Objection. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Mrs. Skinner, what happens when there's an out-of-order sign on a ladies' room?
People stay out.
Right. Seemed like it would be a good place to, say, change from one outfit to another without being noticed by anyone.
Objection.
Withdrawn, Your Honor. No more questions.
The witness will step down. All right, we'll leave it there. Court will adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The judge bangs his gavel.
And at 10 o'clock tomorrow, Dr. Gordon will give us exactly what we need. You're picking him up at 9?
Yep, got it all arranged.
Mac looks relieved. A sign above an arch proclaims the building a Los Angeles courthouse. Smartly besuited Phil urgently enters the courtroom with a briefcase and bustles up to the table where Mac and Laurie are sitting.
He wasn't there.
Mac looks confused as Phil takes his place at the table.
I'm sorry, what do you mean he wasn't there?
The hospital said he's taken an indefinite leave of absence. None of his neighbors know where he's gotten to, and if his family knows, they're not talking.
So, what are we gonna do?
All rise. The Honorable Judge Jeffries presiding. Los Angeles Criminal Court now in session. Case number 389562, The People versus Lori Carter.
I'll call your next witness, Mr. McBride.
Right, this is a bit embarrassing, but it seems as though my next witness has disappeared.
Oh, disappeared?
Yes, sir. Under the circumstances, I would request a continuance so that we may regroup and try to find him.
A continuance?
Yes, sir.
Are you seriously asking me for a continuance?
Yes, sir.
There will be no continuances. Now, if you want to find this witness, fine. But this trial will continue.
Max smiles politely.
Defense calls Sarah Sinclair to the stand.
Sarah has been witnessing events from her wheelchair at the back of the courtroom. She wheels herself forward, and the court bailiff steps up to open the wooden gate separating the public gallery from the other officers of the court.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mac toys with a sheet of paper and watches Sarah smile sweetly at the bailiff, then wheel herself to a position in front of the witness stand, next to the 12-strong jury box.
Mrs. Sinclair, over the last 6 months, have you been in social situations with Lori Carter?
Yes, there were various dog shows and kennel club events where we both showed our dogs.
Would it surprise you to know, in fact, you had been together 6 such dog events?
Not really.
These are fairly long functions, aren't they, these dog shows?
They are.
About how many hours are we talking?
Well, by the time you arrive, exercise the dogs, groom them, show them, it's the better part of a day.
Objection, relevance?
Your Honor, please, a little latitude.
It will only be a little latitude, Counselor. It'd
be safe to say that you would have to use the restroom during these day-long events?
Quite probably. And since you're so interested, I should say that one of the consequences of losing one of my kidneys in the accident that occurred when I learned that my husband was having an affair with the defendant is that I have to use the ladies' room more frequently than I did before.
And you would assume that Lori Carter would have to use the facilities as well?
I would.
Even possible that you two were in the ladies' room at the same time?
I really don't recall.
But you're not saying for certain that you weren't together in the ladies' room?
Objection.
Overrule. The witness will answer the question.
I suppose not.
Brush your hair in the ladies' room?
Of course.
See others brush their hair?
Of course.
Did you know? The average person loses 50 to 100 hairs a day just from brushing and combing.
I didn't.
Well, I would think with all that hair flying around, getting stuck in brushes and combs, it wouldn't be too difficult to get hold of a couple of strands of someone's hair, particularly if they were standing right next to you brushing their hair in the ladies' room.
Objection. Speculation.
Sustained. Move on, Mr. McBride.
In your statement to the police, you said that you last saw your husband at 1 p.m. the day he was murdered.
Correct.
What did you do at that time?
It had gotten a little stuffy, so I went out for some fresh air.
On your own?
I am quite capable of moving myself about in my wheelchair, unless I encounter a flight of stairs. Obviously, I can't go up or down.
Where'd you go?
Just out the front.
Anyone see you?
I don't think so.
So basically, we just have your word for it that you were out front of the country club?
I suppose so.
You don't have to go up or down any stairs, do you, to get to the ladies' room closest to the banquet hall?
Objection.
Approach the bench, Mr. McBride.
Mac and the judge have a private confab.
I see where you're going with this. And if you try and link Mrs. Sinclair with your cockamamie framing theory, you'll be back in those cells so fast your feet won't hit the ground.
The judge waves Mac away with a flick of his hand.
Mrs. Sinclair, how do you feel about Lori Carter?
Objection!
Overruled. Witness will answer the question.
I resent her.
Resent? Sounds like a bit of an understatement to me. I think you never forgave your husband for betraying you, and you wanted to punish him and his mistress.
I try to remain civilized.
Civilized? Is that what you call it? I'll tell you what I think happened. I think 6 months prior to the day your husband was murdered gave you ample opportunity to procure strands of Lori Carter's hair.
Objection!
Sustained!
Knowing that the day of the banquet was going to be a very uncivilized payback.
Flashback. Sarah wheels herself to the ladies' loo.
You got yourself to the ladies' room.
She wheels herself through the door and cranes her neck towards the toilet cubicles.
Checked to make sure no one was in there. Hung up the out-of-order sign.
She puts a sticky out-of-order sign on the door, wheels herself back into the loo, then steps nimbly out of the wheelchair. She pushes it into a spare cubicle, then uses a handheld computer. She disguises herself with a long red wig, raincoat, and sunglasses.
Send the text message to Frank to meet in the loading bay.
The message reads, Frank, meet me backstage hallway, urgent. She sends the message and Frank receives it on his mobile. The display shows it as signed by Lori.
Changed into your disguise. Then, you went to the loading dock and Lori. Shot your husband.
She shoots Frank in the chest and he crumples to the floor.
Then sent Lori a text message to bring her to the loading dock to be discovered.
Sarah sends the message.
Then you went down the hallway, purposely getting caught on the security camera so that everyone would see that the killer could walk. Then you went back into the ladies' room and changed again.
She takes the wheelchair from its cubicle, then removes her disguise.
Placed Lori Carter's hair in the wig. After that, it was just a matter of dumping the disguise, making sure you left the wig behind.
Sarah bins the wig in the ladies, tears down the out-of-order sign, and wheels herself away.
This is outrageous!
Aren't you forgetting one small fact in your theory, Mr. McBride? I can't walk.
Your Honor, I had intended on calling Sarah Sinclair's doctor.
Objection.
Sustained.
Who has conveniently disappeared.
Objection.
Sustained.
Who knows for certain that she
can't, I'm holding you in contempt, McBride. Bailiff, please escort Mr. McBride to a holding cell. Court adjourned till 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Another way.
The court bailiff gently guides Mac from the courtroom by the arm. Smartly dressed in black, Sarah looks pensive. Phil hides his face in his hands. Mac sits in a cell in his shirt sleeves. Phil comes in with Jones the guard.
Well, I paid your fine. Here's your letter of apology. Sign it and we can go home.
Sure about that, McBride? Got some really good turkey pot pie on.
Ooh. No.
Can I get some to go? Just open the door for me, Jonesy.
Just for you. Cell 3.
Mac pushes open the cell door.
Sir Sinclair certainly has everybody convinced, don't you?
Pretty much.
Mac shakes his head.
Without that doctor's testimony, it's just the word of a grieving invalid against it.
Jailbird lawyer?
Should we just get her out of that chair?
Mac looks forlorn.
Oh, he set the wheelchair on fire. That'd get her up out of it.
She would just look me right in the eye and burn, rather than let me win.
Mac strokes Jesse.
Hey.
That's going to be something she cares about. Something she cares about more than anything. Something she couldn't possibly stand by and see harmed.
Jesse, the golden-colored pooch, rests his head in Mac's lap, and Mac scratches the dog's ear. Mac stops frowning and smiles to himself. He reaches for a phone and makes a call.
Judy Maxwell, hi, it's McBride. Listen, I need your help with something.
Mac and Judy sit in the back of the pickup truck, which is backed up to the wall of the Sinclair's grounds. Judy peers over the wall.
What if this doesn't work?
And my client hired a really lousy lawyer.
Roberta's silver Ford saloon arrives and pulls up on the verge next to the pickup.
Ah, good.
Roberta gets out.
Hi.
Mr. McBride, what are you two doing? And why did you tell me I had to be a witness? For what?
Get in the truck, I'll show you.
Why?
Your Honor, the defense wishes to recall Sarah Sinclair to the stand.
Your Honor, I think he's badgered the poor woman enough.
I'm inclined to agree, Mr. McBride. Perhaps the weekend made you forget about your time in the holding cell.
No, sir. I promise you, no tricks today.
I'll give you the benefit of the doubt against my better judgment. Don't make me regret that decision.
The witness is instructed to take the stand.
Laurie smiles.
Mrs. Sinclair, do you believe in miracles?
Objection. Irrelevant.
Sustained. Remember what I said, Mr. McBride.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm almost there, I promise. You know, the one aspect of this case that just kept nagging at me. Why would the killer make sure they were seen passing the security camera when they could have simply snuck out unnoticed? And then it became very simple. It was so that no one would suspect the one person who couldn't possibly be seen walking past the security camera. You.
I cannot object strongly enough at the blatant harassment of this witness, Your Honor.
Mr. McBride, do you have a fondness for being in jail? Because you're 2 seconds away from going there again.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Mac steps up to the bench.
While the hospitality of the county is top drawer, I do not wish to partake of it anymore. If the court would just allow me a little more rope, I'll either solve this case or hang myself with it.
I'd be happy with either.
Thank you.
The reason I asked earlier, Mrs. Sinclair, if you believe in miracles, because yesterday, Detective Hansen and I witnessed one.
A video of the Sinclair garden.
Dexter!
Her dog lies apparently unmoving at the poolside. Sarah springs out of her wheelchair and runs towards it. Mac freezes the picture with a remote. The judge and even ADA Sullivan look stunned.
Judy Maxwell is very happy to lend us your dog's brother, Rudy, who just happens to love playing dead. And you realize there was nothing wrong with him? Didn't even occur to you that we had switched dogs.
Sarah bows her head. Mac discards the remote and returns to his seat. Sarah stretches in her wheelchair, then nonchalantly crosses one leg over the other.
If he'd just finally been finished with her. If I'd known I'd had him back for good, I could have pretended to make a slow recovery and just finally gotten out of this chair. And no one would have to have known. But he couldn't stay away from her. And I don't like to lose. Ever.
At the police station, Roberta is examining a file in her office. Mac arrives and leans against her door.
Hey.
Well, if it isn't Houdini himself. You managed to pull another rabbit out of that hat, didn't you?
I'll tell you what, you know, if I hadn't had you as a witness to my little stunt, I probably couldn't have done it. Mm. I have a small token of my appreciation for you.
More flowers.
Mac goes and returns cradling a fluffy retriever puppy.
Detective Hansen, meet Caesar.
For me? He's mine?
He hands her the fluffy puppy.
Mac, don't tease me.
Oh, there's one condition.
God, he's precious.
Jesse said you have to bring him over to play.
A lot.
That's a deal, thank you.
She kisses him.